Today we're going to talk about the first two chapters of the book Anatomy of Healing Prayer by Ernest Holmes. It's part of the Holmes Papers books, and this year in study group we're going to study two of the Holmes Papers books. This one, The Anatomy of Healing Prayer, and the other one, which is called Ideas of Power. And they are compilations of talks and writings that Ernest Holmes did in the last 5 to 10 years of his life. So it represents the mature thinking of Ernest Holmes, and this is Ernest Holmes' birthday. So we are celebrating the ideas and the consciousness of Ernest Holmes, the founder of Science of Mind. And as I was thinking about how to introduce this talk, particularly aware that there might be a couple people in the room who had never heard of Science of Mind before, I thought I would bring the Map of the Scale of Human Consciousness by David Hawkins, which is often where I start my talks. But particularly today, to look at the Map of the Scale of Human Consciousness, to think about where Science of Mind fits on this map. Because there's a place for all consciousness on this map. From the philosophies that are focused on shame or grief or fear or anger, the philosophies that focus on courage and acceptance and reason and love, and the philosophies that focus on peace and enlightenment. And so I love this particular map because it gives us a tool to talk about consciousness, and I don't see it as a tool for comparing other people. One of our founding members, our dear Kate Hannigan, said, people are for loving, not for comparing. And so we're going to not use this scale for comparison and say, this is better than that, but rather, where am I and where do I want to be? Am I feeling fear and I want to feel love? Am I feeling courage and I want to feel joy? Where am I and where am I going? How can I choose things in my life that will move me in the direction of the consciousness that I would like to show up on the planet with? And this tool is incredibly valuable to me. I look at it all the time. I refer to it all the time. And I would have taken it out yesterday to look at where is Science of Mind on this. And the truth is that Science of Mind can be almost anywhere above courage on this map, because Science of Mind encourages you to have the courage to confront the belief system that you currently have, to take the opportunity to make a choice about your belief rather than simply believing what you've been taught or what you've absorbed by our culture. It gives you the opportunity to choose for yourself. And that opportunity isn't available in every philosophy. A lot of philosophies want to tell you what's true and run with their rules. And we are a very empowering philosophy. We believe that you should figure it out for yourself, that you have the intelligence, you have the skill, if you choose to apply yourself in that direction, to decide what's true. My first minister of Science of Mind said, no one can tell you what's true for you except you. And so we can start with courage, and then neutrality is about trusting and letting go and believing that somehow, some way, this is a friendly universe and that things work out for us. So you can find that in Science of Mind. There is a lot of willingness in Science of Mind. It's about optimism. And Science of Mind is the belief that life can get better and that we can make choices that move us in an intention that is more helpful and hopeful than what we've had before. Acceptance is about seeing life as good. and recognizing that in some way what is good. And later on in the talk, I'll talk about a quote from Holmes where he says that everything that is the nature of limitation is built, limitation is but the limitless flowing through us at the level of our acceptance. And when we release our resistance to life, we are opening to greater acceptance of life. The science in Science of Mind is at the level of reason. And many people encounter Science of Mind, and I first did, at the level of reason. I felt that the God I grew up with was impossible to understand. And nothing that I was taught made sense to me in a way that I could use it. And so when I encountered Science of Mind, I found a reasonable philosophy that I could understand. What I realized after I had been studying Science of Mind at the level of mind for quite a while is that there is also a lot of love in Science of Mind, which is the next level up on Hawkins' map. When they asked Ernest Holmes toward the end of his life if there was anything he would change, he said, "If I had to do it again, I would spend more time talking about the love and less about the law." And so that was Ernest's conclusion. But the essence of love has been a very powerful part of Science of Mind for me. I've been studying it for almost 30 years now. And reverence and seeing the universe as something of value to revere is one of the flavors of joy for me. I also study another philosophy, Abraham Hicks, which is very irreverent, which is another flavor of joy for me. But to feel awe and reverence about the divinity of life feels good to me. So that's at the nature of love. And joy is oneness. And the chapter that we're studying today is about oneness. Unity, the consciousness of unity is the name of the first chapter of the textbook. And that's about oneness. And peace is the next level. And if you look at the process for peace on this chart, it says illumination. The second chapter that I'm going to talk about today is called the healing light, which is about the process of illumination. So consciousness is embedded in Science of Mind. And you can enter the Science of Mind philosophy if you want to have a more expansive view of life at any of these levels. It will support growth at any of these levels. And one of the most powerful experiences I had when I was studying David Hawkins, he had a video, and he had the map of human consciousness on a big board, like one of these whiteboards on the wall. It covered the whole board. And he looked at it and he gestured the whole board and he said, "Of course it's all love." I almost fell off my chair. Because it's love expressed as guilt, it's love expressed as fear, it's love expressed as anger or revenge. Because everything that is the impulse is the impulse to love. And we are conditioned by our experience to express that love in different ways. It might be expressed as killing someone who hurt someone I love, but that still is an expression of love at the highest level that person has access to in every moment. So we begin to be understanding of the way people approach life. Some of them do things we think we would never do. But having not walked a mile in their moccasins, we don't know what we would have done under the circumstances that they grew up in with the philosophy and the beliefs they were taught. And so becoming aware of the love is a huge part of the Science of Mind from my perspective. So as I was rereading this chapter in Anatomy of Healing Prayer, again, I discovered that many of the things I talk most about and have in teaching Science of Mind for the last 25 years is in this chapter. He started out saying, "The enlightened have taught the unity of all life, the indivisibility of life, and therefore the omnipresence of all life." And he said, "We all have flashes of this, you know. We all see beyond the present situation and hear beyond the horizon of our present experience." And while I was preparing for this talk, I was going to the gym and walking on the treadmill and rereading these two chapters. I did that 4 or 5 times. I just simply started out preparing for this talk by rereading those chapters over and over again. And earlier this week, I was going to the gym and I thought, okay, I'll read the chapters again. But there was a book in my car that I wanted to read that I hadn't picked up. And I thought, no, I think I'll just read this book while I'm on the treadmill today. And I picked up that book. It's called The Power of Perception by Marcus Bach. He's a minister, trained theologian. And he talked about a lot of things that are in this chapter, and about seeing the light and about how we all fit into that consciousness of unity. And he talked about seeing the unseen and hearing the unheard and feeling the unfelt and our ability to connect with that divine energy through that unity. It's all a part of the connection. And so I've written 5 books, one of which has been published, one of which is free on my website. But there, as I read Ernest's books, I was reminded of things in my own books that related to what Ernest was saying, and realized every time I opened one of my books in the past couple of weeks, I realized that the page I was reading was directly related to what I was talking about this time. And so I brought a few excerpts from different ones of the books to share with you today. My books are called Chatting with the Beloved, and it's a conversation with God. So I ask the Beloved questions. I have a conversation with the Divine. And this particular day, I was talking to the Beloved, and I said that the class I was teaching was about immortality. And to me, the God is collective. It is not a singular force. It is collective. And so I call the Beloved they, or be for Beloved. And Beloved said, "We're not so keen on the word immortality. It's like a double negative, not mortal. Like there's mortal due to die soon and immortal not due to die soon. As if mortal is the standard or something. We'd like eternality to be the standard. You are eternal beings who always are sometimes also having temporal experiences. It's not either or, it's both and while you are here on this planet. You are always non-physical and sometimes also physical. You are always non-local and sometimes also local. You are always infinite as well as finite. Look at how these words define the divine aspect by negating the human aspect. Non-physical, non-local, infinite, immortal. There are limitations in our language." And that jumped out at me because it's saying that even the very language we use teaches us duality. It teaches us that we are different than the divine. And the divine can only be expressed by negating what we are. That's not right. That's just not right. And B said, "We like eternal and temporal because they're both affirmative. You are currently in all time and in local time at the same time. That's fun. I said, I appreciate your riffing on the words, B. I never noticed how the wording kind of implies either or rather than encouraging us to think of both and. And I said, another song is going through my mind now. Because what Ernest said is, we all have flashes of this, you know. We all see beyond the present situation and hear beyond the horizon of our present experience. And so I was talking to the beloved, and what I said is, another song is going through my mind, Carly Simon's song called Life is Eternal, where the chorus goes, life is eternal, love is immortal, and death is only a horizon. Life is eternal as we move into the light, and a horizon is nothing except the limit of our sight. Nothing except the limit of our sight. Death is only a horizon, a perceptual limit. As Marcus Bach said, we must learn to see the unseen, or the commonly unseen. Like a horizon, too, death is... it's something that seems to move away as we approach it. And I said to them, I love all those conversations I had with my mother about her seeing all the dead folks in the corner. She was already seeing beyond the horizon that I could see. She saw her mother and her sister and my father. She knew that death was a horizon. She could see beyond it in those days. So that's powerful to me as we think of this unity of life. How can we see ourselves in the unity of life? And again, Ernest goes on in this first chapter. He quotes Aurobindo, an Indian philosopher, who said, transcendence doesn't reconcile, it transmutes. Very deep thought. Transcendence doesn't reconcile, it transmutes. What does that mean? Well, I've been thinking about that a lot the last couple of weeks. And it means that we don't fix a problem. We don't fix a problem. We don't figure it out. We see it from a different perspective, and all of a sudden the solution appears. We're not deconstructing something. And in the following paragraph, Ernest says, we are not trying to reintegrate or disintegrate anything. And this is another one of the things that I quote all the time from Ernest Holmes. I've paraphrased it a little. There is nothing to disintegrate or reintegrate, but only that to be revealed which has always been whole. And as a practitioner of science of mind, my intention with my prayers, with my work with people, is to see their wholeness, to know that they're not broken, because we can't fix it if we perceive it as broken. We have to perceive it as whole and be inspired to the next gentle step of the solution. Anatomy of Healing Prayer goes on to say in this first chapter, the work is not to put something there that wasn't there, but to reveal something that was already there. The way I tend to say that is, I'm not trying to create something I'm not in my life. I'm trying to perceive something that I already am. I'm trying to understand the oneness. I'm trying to understand how God expresses in me, through me, and as me. And Ernest talked about using our hearts, not just our minds, to focus on love. And that took me to another place. This is from my second Chatting with the Beloved book. That one hasn't been published yet, but it's going to come out on Kindle soon because the editing's done for the Kindle version. So they said, I said, Rosie, that was my cat at the time. She dropped by for a pet yesterday, and I got distracted, so I didn't finish our chat yesterday. And B said, no reason to be sorry. We love it that you take a break whenever your kitties come out to say, hi, C. That's how they always greet me, hi, C. B said, your kitties are part of the we that we are, just as you are. You chat with us all day, every day, in everything and everyone. That's a powerful thought. When we're chatting with anyone, we are chatting with God. We are chatting with the Beloved. We are chatting with the Divine. We are chatting with the Divine expressed at the level of consciousness. Because each person is allowing as much of that light that they are to express based on the filter that they are experiencing in the moment. Might be a filter of fear, it might be a filter of anger, might be a filter of love or oneness. So everyone is the Divine. That's what B said. You chat with us all day, every day, in everything and everyone. I said, that's hard to wrap my brain around, B. And they said, as we've told you before, it's a lot easier to wrap your heart around it. I said, how do I do that? They said, wrap your heart around love. Intend to love your life. Love yourself and everyone else you can think of as much and as often as possible. I said, I wish everyone can feel your love and be touched by your wisdom as I am, dear B. They said, everyone doesn't want to connect with us as you did, as you do. You didn't even want this 2 years ago. I said, that's true. I had made a rule for myself that I didn't want to channel. Reading William Paul Young's book, The Shack, changed my life. I suddenly wanted so much to have a personal relationship with God. He called it living loved. I said, I want to feel, live loved. I want to feel your love infinitely and pass it along powerfully. They said, you already do feel our love more of the time. And infinitely is a good word because there's no limit to how much love you can access and flow. I said, I love that you are fun, funny, and familiar, B. I love that you tell silly jokes that make me laugh. I love that you are always here when I pick up the pen. They said, there's nowhere else for us to be. Always here is a great definition of omnipresence. And omnipresence is a hoot. And they've said that dozens of times, literally, in the four books that I've written, Chatting with the Beloved, because it all comes down to omnipresence. And I said, why do you always say that, B? Omnipresence is a hoot. And they said, because we want you to perceive our presence as fun, friendly, and familiar. And remember, you are part of the we that we are. So we also want you to take us lightly. I said, one and many, all one, always, always. That's something B has told me many times. That the universe is one and many, that is still all one, in all ways, always. I think it's brilliant. I think it's really powerful. And so Ernest went on to say in the second chapter, back of what you are and back of what I am is all there is, surging to express with what you are and what I am. And then he said, well, at first this might sound like a conceited concept. Does God spend all his time thinking of me? Yes, God spends all his time thinking about me. But since God is undivided and indivisible and infinite, God spends all his time thinking about you. Omnipresence is a hoot. If you think about omnipresence, it's impossible to think about the wholeness of omnipresence. But the idea of expanding our mind, Ernest was always saying, stretch the intellect and let in more spiritual territory. Open your heart and feel the love. Anatomy of Healing Prayer says our whole work is based on the concept perfect God, perfect man, and perfect being. Our whole practice is based on the concept that God is where we are and what we are, and there isn't anything else. And that idea of the oneness, they are always here with us. There is never a moment when they are not here with us. And they said to me, remember when you were a kid learning to swim, this is the beloved, you would call out to your mom on the beach, look at me, mommy, watch me. You felt frustrated she was talking to your friends and not paying attention to you. We were watching you then. We are always paying attention to you, focused on you, caring for you and about you. Your mom did her best to attend to everything calling out for her loving attention. But if you look to the mortals, you're in trouble. Look to us. Look to us. You will always find that we are looking back. We were looking at you first. We will be looking at you first, last, and always. How does that feel to you? They asked me. I said, it makes me cry. You're starting to get through to my heart on a much grander scale. And they said, that's the grander scale we're looking for. We want to share with you the tenderness we feel toward you. We are here, tenderly loving and attending to every being, every leaf, every pebble, every ripple and wave in the water. We love it all. And we are especially fond of you, as William Paul Young said in The Shack. Each of you. Our love for each one is infinite and eternal and right here and right now. It's hard for most people to think about. It is so big, and it's harder for many to feel it. They said, we are building together here. We are building a magnificent work of life, our life, a life, your life. You are living our life. Everyone is living our life, and you are free to live it alone if you want to. But we don't think you wanted to, really, ever. You could feel as a kid that someone was supposed to be paying attention to your learning, applauding your accomplishments, coaching and encouraging you, providing for your travels and adventures. That was why it's so frustrating when your mom couldn't pay attention. God knows she tried. She felt torn to pieces trying to attend all those she loved who were calling to her, look at me, look at me. She didn't know how to teach you to look to us for the loving attention and encouragement you craved and deserved. Attending to you is our job, our joy. We do it well and endlessly. Let us do our work. Stop looking to your moms and your lovers for the love that we're already giving to you 24/7, 365. Tune in to our station. We are always playing your song. Always playing your song. So, Ernest said, am I but a puppet living God's life? And he addressed that by telling a story about a singer that he had been talking to and working with and praying for. The legend about it is that it's Peggy Lee, but I haven't seen that documented anywhere, so I'm not sure. But some famous singer at the time was going to give a concert, and she said, because you were coming, I want it to be the best concert I've ever given. And Ernest prayed for her and said, it will be the best concert you've ever given, but not because I am there. It will be the best concert you've ever given because this is God singing. What is to stop God from singing? This is the light that the world knows nothing about. I'm back to quoting Anatomy of Healing Prayer. This is God singing. It isn't an imitation of God. It doesn't obliterate her individuality. It is the only thing that accentuates it. It's the only thing that permits it. This is the universal artist devoting his or her or its whole time to what I'm saying right now, as though he had nothing else to do. He, she, or it, or they, whatever pronoun you want to use for God. This is the light that lighteth every man's path. To surrender to this genius is not conceit. You and I cannot announce our greatness without including the greatness of everything that lives. Something forevermore binds our eyes to the perception of self unless it interprets itself everywhere. The self is everywhere. The oneness, the unity, the power, the grace, the light, the love, the peace is everywhere. We converse with the beloved in every moment. There is no one we can talk to who is not divine life. Okay, divine life expressing through some filter of consciousness, but divine life, this is the life. And I want to end with a little story that came from Marcus Bach. It's very short. An elderly man, James Walker, came to ride with me in my reverie when I remembered how he had said, "I love peoples, animals, birds, plants, and flowers, and live to express the joy of the abundant life. I find delight in visiting lonely men and women if they want me, and to bring some sunshine into their lives. I love art and the classics. I've painted watercolors, and am altogether a most happy man of nearly 75 of years. These things I do, even though for 30 years I've been blind, only able to tell day from night. However, by turning from all the evidence of the material senses to the inner light, I truly see. We are what we think, and all that is created, perfect and harmonious in mind, becomes perfect and harmonious in the objective world." By turning from all evidence of the material senses to the inner light, I truly see. And that's what these two chapters are. It's turning from the material to the light, to the love, to the peace, to the power, to the grace, to the unity that is God. And seeing that in ourselves and all others. Ernest said, "We are not in it, or of it, or with it. We are it. We are it." And we are also, in fact, in it, and of it, and with it, because everything else is it as well. One and many. All one. Always. Always.